Science.
Film.
Ethics.
Performance.
Conversation.
Music.
On RN. Welcome, 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 beloved listeners. Did you perchance hear that little news item about the attempt to improve the public toilets in Beijing? Apparently, no more than two flies will be permitted, but I'm not entirely sure whether it refers to insects or zippers. Later in the program, Anthony Martin Fernando. Extraordinary story of an extraordinary fella. Son of an Aboriginal woman, born in Woolloomooloo around 1864. His dad may have been an African-American convict in the First Fleet. Anyway, he went on to become a welder, toy maker, jewellery maker, trader and servant. And tonight you will hear of his performance as a solitary and lonely protester, being remarkably effective and dramatic as a one-man band, really, telling the story of Australia's Indigenous people in the UK and Europe. We're also going to look at foreign investment. Do we have, or are we encouraging, a sort of white Australia policy when it comes to investment? You'd be surprised to learn that the Chinese investment in this country is really reducing. Maybe that they've been miffed by recent decisions, discouraging decisions. But first, Iran and this week's news that the International Atomic Energy Agency has reached agreement with Iran to allow UN weapons inspections, but the future and stability of the agreement depends on the next round of talks between the Iranians and the P5 plus one group. P5 plus one, Britain, China, France, Russia, the US plus Germany. It's due to be held today, that's May 23, in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad. That in itself sounds quite intriguing. No doubt the West will expect Iran to curb its uranium enrichment program, while the country will be looking initially for some relief from the imposition of increasingly devastating sanctions. Now, the news of this agreement has been greeted sceptically by Israel, but my next guest views it very positively. I'm pleased to welcome back to our little program Meir Javed Anfar, an Iranian-Israeli Middle East analyst, co-author of the first biography of Ahmadinejad with the enchanting title of Nuclear Sphinx. He's the founder of the Middle East of Economic and Political Analysis Company, writes regularly for The Diplomat and various other journals. Welcome back to the program. You see this agreement as being very positive. Why do you think it's more likely to succeed than the other ones?
Well, first of all, it's great to be back on the show, Philip. I think yesterday's agreement is positive because for many years the Iranian government has refused to answer questions about some of the suspected nuclear activities that it took part in before. The International Atomic Energy Agency asked Iran to clarify what it was doing with the computer simulation simulating a nuclear explosion. What was it doing with a design plan to develop a nuclear trigger? And there's also another site near Tehran called Parchin. It's a military site where it's apparently they were developing a chamber where they could test explosives which would be used in a nuclear bomb. So Iran has so far refused to answer questions. Yesterday's accord clears the way for them to do so as long as this agreement is signed. This is one thing I've got to say. It has not been signed yet. But I think the fact that the Iranians are now at least willing to talk about it, I think this in itself is a positive sign.
Mayor, what on earth made them want to have these negotiations in Baghdad?
Excellent question. It's amazing how the times change. It's amazing how the Middle East changes. You know, every time in one part of the world when there's an earthquake, the topographers come up with a new with new maps to show the new layers of topography after the earthquake. Here we need to have political maps every 10 years to show us the ground changing events that change place and change the topography of this region. Baghdad used to be the capital of Saddam Hussein, a man who invaded Iran, where I was born, and killed many Iranians. But today Iraq is a different country. It's ruled by Shiites, thanks to the U.S. invasion. The Shiites basically claimed their democratic rights as the majority, and now they're very close to the Iranian government, so close, in fact, that the Iranian government insisted that the talks take place there.
It's going to be I would have thought, a security nightmare. I understand it will be happening in the green zone, but there'll have to be a lot of personnel there to protect the various leaders.
Absolutely. There is a lot of personnel, but I think the biggest security headache today was a sandstorm that they had in Baghdad. Knowing their luck, there was a massive sandstorm there. And luckily, they didn't blame Israel for it, which is a nice change. Well, we got away with that one. But there was a sandstorm. But thankfully, everything, you know, with the delay, started at 12 p.m. And they're right now negotiating. We haven't had any statements yet about how they're progressing.
Well, of course, they will want the easing of the sanctions. I didn't realize that U.S. dollars are literally being bought and sold on the streets. And people are stocking up on the wealthy apparently can get U.S. dollars at a cheaper rate, and then they profiteer them.
Absolutely. The sanctions are hurting the people, but thankfully there has not been an impact on the importing of medicine and food for the people of Iran. So it's something that's very important. We have to make sure that sanctions don't impact the import of food and medicine. We don't want them to run low, because that's not in anybody's interest.
That's what happened, of course, with the sanctions against Iraq.
Of course, absolutely. We must make sure that to learn from that, that that's not going to happen. And I have to say, so far it's not happening, thankfully. They are also in some ways, you know, they're hurting the interest of the Revolutionary Guard, many of whom are loyal to the regime because of the contracts they get. They get favored status for contracts. One party which seems to be doing well from the sanctions is Iranian women, and you may ask why. Well, in Iran, when women get divorced, the husband can throw them out and not pay them anything. The law doesn't oblige them. So Iranian women, before they get married, they sign a contract with their husband saying, if you divorce me, you have to pay me 200 gold coins, 400 gold coins, 600, so they sign it. Anyway, since the sanctions, the price of gold has skyrocketed in Iran, so any Iranian man who wanted to treat his wife not so nicely, he's got to be scared about her divorcing him, because he has to pay a lot of money to divorce her, and if he can't, he'll end up in jail. So it's one strike for the Iranian feminist movement.
Okay. You note that Netanyahu has come under a lot of criticism in Israel of late for his stance against Iran, including two former Israeli intelligence chiefs. This has had apparently a fairly sizable impact on Israeli public opinion about possible intervention.
Absolutely. Nobody in Israel wants this regime to have nuclear weapons, but I think there's a distinct concern in this country about how Iran should be stopped. I think there's still support for sanctions and diplomacy. And also, if there is going to be a war, as the recent polls showed, over a majority of Israelis prefer that if there's going to be a war, that Israel should follow America and not go it alone.
It's interesting that a former Mossad chief said that the ultra-Orthodox radicalization poses a greater threat than Ahmadinejad.
Of course, because according to the foreign press here in Israel, we have 200 nuclear weapons, and Mr. Ahmadinejad and Mr. Khamenei know that very well, and that's a deterrence, and that has stopped them attacking Israel conventionally, and that will stop them attacking Israel with nuclear weapons if they ever have one. So we have a very strong deterrence against them. But when you have movements inside Israel who don't believe in the rule of law, but they believe in the rule of God, and you know, if they reclaim their democratic rights ever in the future, then we're going to have problems here, because we're going to turn into an Iran-like state.
I must say I'd forgotten that about 500,000 Israelis took to the streets last year to protest domestic social justice issues, and they're not too impressed that Netanyahu's attention has been placed so emphatically on Iran.
Yes, this is another, well, in fact, his former rival, Mr. Shaul Mofaz, who recently joined him in his coalition government, accused him of using the Iran issue to distract attention. Of course, you know, nobody in Israel wants the government to take his eyes off Iran because it's not a fantasy here. The threat is very real. Iran financed suicide bombings in Israel for many years. And they called for our elimination only 3 days ago. However, we would like to live in this country also. We would like to thrive. It's a country that's got many exports. We're doing well in high tech, in other areas. And people didn't just move here to suffer. They want to live. You know, the idea of Zionism is everybody living as equals under the law, but with economic prosperity. And the economic prosperity is becoming more difficult here. There's more disparity.
Well, something that's going to add or focus people's minds wonderfully in Baghdad is that Monday just gone, the US Senate approved legislation to impose even tougher sanctions, as well as other countries or companies that break the embargo. Apparently, he's now empowered to impose sanctions on any country or company that enters joint ventures with Iran.
I think the timing of that was wrong, to be honest with you. We should have waited till at least today to see what the Iranian reaction is going to be. If the Iranians were going to be, you know, not flexible, if they're seen as not willing to show any flexibility and if they're not playing ball, then yes, you could say, okay, now we can justify another round of sanctions, and you could basically create a mechanism whereby it shows if Iran doesn't cooperate when there's going to be sanctions. But when you impose sanctions before talks, you basically strengthen the hardliners in Iran who say, what's the point of showing flexibility when they sanction us even without us, you know, going into the next round of talks?
Well, let's all keep our fingers crossed that the talks do, in fact, go well. And if they fail, Mayor?
A higher price of oil, I am afraid. I think we could see Iran trying to create an atmosphere of tensions where the price of oil could go up. Some Iranian politicians are already talking about perhaps an oil. They said an oil at $160 a barrel is not going to benefit the West. I think we could see Iran making problems perhaps in places such as Afghanistan, where Iran's got influence. This is a possibility. We could see instability there. But more belligerent statements from the regime. But I think oil is going to be the number one target.
We'll talk again soon. But thanks for that, Mayor Jadnan Fata, an Iranian-Israeli Middle East analyst, and he's always interesting. Coming up, who's buying Australia's agricultural land, and why is Chinese investment going down?